Good morning and welcome to Occupy the Airwaves. Okay, last week I gave a brief history of life on the planet. There wasn't any life on the planet for the first billion years or so, and then the next 2 billion years were mostly one-celled bacteria and other one-celled organisms, and then eventually when we adopted the mitochondria, it allowed multicellular life forms, and then there was the whole explosion of life, Cambrian period, I think they call it. And now here we are today with an abundance on life on the planet, although humans are killing off a lot of species, but still there is an abundance of life on the planet. So how did it go if we were all once unicellular creatures, and then we went to multicellular, and then we went to sexual reproducing creatures? How do we end up where we are here today, where there's close to 9 billion people on the planet and 1% of those humans control the other 99% and all of the wealth of the planet, which by wealth of the planet, I mean the assets they are able to strip and rip and loot from Mother Nature, Earth, which we all depend on for life. How is it possible that 1% of humans control the other 99% of us? Is it because they're smarter? No. You can look at some of them. You can look at, Klaus Schwab or George Soros or Bill Gates. Come on now. How did it go from we're all just crawling around the planet's face to, okay, now you are a slave and you are the owner. Now you're the wage slave and you are the capitalist. How did that happen? Well, it was a brutal process, a very brutal process. It involved murder. Our capitalist exploitation started in Europe when a small group of people seized what in those days was the means of production, the land, with the enclosure acts. And what they did was they got brutes and they hired them to go kill people and drive people off the land. And they said, well, now that land is not yours anymore. It used to be everyone had it in common. It was called the commons, and it was called the commonwealth, but no longer, no, now it belongs to me. I am the lord, and I've got these brutes here, and if you don't get off that land, which now I call my land, I'm going to kill you. They're going to kill you. And that's basically how it came about. But then they invented forms of propaganda, for instance, the church back then. You go to church and you learn that God made it like this, and you have to give unto the under the king, what is the king's, or something like that. I don't know. For a while, they used that kind of propaganda. And then later on, we went into the Enlightenment and all, so they had to come up with more sophisticated forms of propaganda. But now we have the internet, and now we, the people, can talk with each other, and we can talk about, hey, I don't really think that Bill Gates should be able to control everything I do. I really don't. Do you? No, I don't either. What about you? Nah, I don't think so. So you see what I'm saying? That's why they don't like the internet. So now they're switching to censorship and banning. The boot is coming back down, as George Orwell said. If you want to imagine the future of humanity, just picture a boot on a human face stomping over and over. And that's where we're moving to. If they can't get the propaganda to work, it works on a lot of people. I mean, you see people and they say the stupidest things, and you're like, where did you get that? Oh, you got it from your phone or the TV or something like that. Yeah, that's a lie. Sorry, you're spouting ridiculous propaganda. So anyhow, they are clamping down on the internet because they don't like us talking among ourselves. And this article is by Lee Fang at leefang.com. It's U.S. funds Ukraine group censoring critics, smearing pro-peace voices. And the subheading is, American taxpayers are footing the bill for Ukrainian NGOs focused on smearing proponents of a diplomatic solution as Russian disinformation agents. Because if you want peace in Ukraine and you want the U.S. and NATO to quit pushing Ukrainians into their deaths, those people from the middle part of the country, they got no business going over to the east and killing the people of the east. And most of them don't even want to. They drag them off the street into vans and take them off to a recruiting center and hand them a rifle and send them off to go in the trenches. They don't want to do that. They're doing it for NATO. And people like Lindsey Graham and David Cameron, they say the quiet part out loud. This is an investment. All we have to do is give them money and weapons, and they will go die for us. They will die for the profits of Cargill and BlackRock. That's a bargain. They literally say it. This is a good investment. But the Ukrainians, not so much, they're not that into it. And they know they have no business going over to other people's land and kicking them out of their homes and going in their basements. And, you know, I mean, they have no right to do that. But they're doing it. And they're doing it because the United States and NATO are making them do it. And if you say that the United States and NATO should stop doing that, should leave the Ukrainians alone and let the people of the West stay in the West and the people in the East stay in the East, and they don't want to be part of the same country anymore, that's their business. It's not the business of the United States to kill off the last Ukrainian so that BlackRock can steal their land. So anyhow, but if you say that, if you say leave them alone, let them work it out themselves, like they would have right off back to over 2 years ago, they had a peace plan worked out, but the United States and Boris Johnson said, no, you can't do that. You have to keep fighting. So yeah, but if you say that, well, then that's Russian disinformation, see? Yeah, they're freedom fighters, like the Contras, right? Sure, and ISIS, yeah. The United States loves to pick unsavory characters to be their freedom fighters. In Ukraine, it's Nazis. Except for the Nazis aren't the ones doing the fighting. Now that Zelensky had been promoted to ambassador and he's no longer the commander-in-chief, well, he wasn't sending the actual Nazis to the front lines. He had them in the back because he liked the Nazis. He didn't want to kill them. They're sending the poor recruits from, you know, central Ukraine to go invade East Ukraine. But now that Zelensky is the commander-in-chief, he's trying to send these two battalions that are the remnants of the right sector and Azov militias. One of them's called the 3rd Brigade or something. I forget the other one. He's trying to send them to the front lines, and they're not going. They're mutinying. They're saying, we're not going to go. We don't want to go get killed. That's for the poor slobs just off the farm. That's who we want to get killed. We don't want to get killed. We're the Nazis. We want to live. So anyhow, so this is by Li Fang. Ukraine's American-backed fight against Russia is taking place not only in the blood-soaked trenches of the Donbas region, but also on what military planners call the cognitive battlefield, to win hearts and minds. A sprawling constellation of media outlets organized with substantial funding and direction from the U.S. government has not just sought to counter Russian propaganda, but has supported strong censorship laws and shutdowns of dissident outlets, disseminated disinformation of its own, and sought to silence critics of the war, including many American citizens. He doesn't mention Gonzalo Lira, but I will here. Gonzalo Lira, who was an American citizen who lived in Ukraine, and he criticized the war. And he's dead now because they threw him into jail and the United States wouldn't do a dang thing. Just even when the State Department spokesman was asked about it multiple times, are you going to do something about that U.S. citizen who's being tortured in a Ukrainian jail? And they just say, yeah, we're aware of that, but we aren't doing anything to stop it. And then he died. Economist Jeffrey Sachs, commentator Tucker Carlson, journalist Glenn Greenwald, and University of Chicago professor John Mersheimer are among the critics on both the left and the right who have been cast as part of a network of Russian propaganda. But the figures targeted by the Ukrainian watchdog groups are hardly Kremlin agents. They simply have forcefully criticized dominant narratives around the war. Sachs is a highly respected international development expert who has angered Ukrainian officials over his repeated calls for a diplomatic solution to the current military conflict. Last November, he gave a speech at the United Nations calling for a negotiated peace. A negotiated peace? Well, he must be a Russian bot. Mersheimer has written extensively on international relations and is a skeptic of NATO expansion. He predicted that Western efforts to militarize Ukraine would lead to a Russian invasion. Greenwald is a Pulitzer Prize-winning independent journalist who has criticized not just war coverage, but media dynamics that suppress voices that run counter to U.S. narratives. Quote, what they mean when they demand censorship of pro-Russia propaganda is anything that questions the U.S.-EU role in the Ukraine war or who dissents from their narratives, unquote, Glenwald has observed. There's no evidence of Kremlin influence over their viewpoints, but their comments alone are enough for a network of U.S.-backed Ukrainian media groups to tarnish these experts as Russian propagandists. Well, you can call them Ukrainian media groups, but I'd be willing to bet that not only is it American money funding them, I bet it's American public relations people writing the tripe they put out. U.S. taxpayer dollars are flowing to outlets such as New Voice of Ukraine, Vox Ukraine, Detector Media, the Institute of Mass Information, the Public Broadcasting Company of Ukraine, and many others. Some of this money has come from the $44.1 billion in civilian needs foreign aid committed to Ukraine. While the funding is officially billed as an ambitious program to develop high-quality independent news programs, counter malign Russian influence, and modernize Ukraine's archaic media laws, the new sites in many cases have promoted aggressive messages that stray from traditional journalistic practices to promote their Ukrainian government's official positions and delegitimize its critics. Well, that sounds like American journalists, doesn't it? They no longer do traditional journalism, which is just the facts, man, just the facts. No, now they just do all propaganda all the time. Fox Ukraine has released highly produced videos attacking the credibility of American opposition voices, including Sachs, Mersheimer, and Greenwald. Detector Media, one of the most influential media watchdog groups, similarly produces a flow of social media and posts branding American critics of the war as part of a Russian disinformation operation. The outlets are also devoted to domestic disputes. Detector Media's broadcasts have lampooned critics of Ukrainian government moves to shut down opposition media outlets. So this Detector Media is supposed to be a media watchdog group. But when Zelensky shut down, and it wasn't just Zelensky, it was Poroshenko before him, shuts down dissident voices, well, then that's good. And anyone who criticizes shutting down dissident media, this watchdog media group goes after them instead of the government that's shutting down the media. And people don't see anything wrong with that? Really? Come on now. It's not only dissident voices targeted by the USAID-funded groups. Detector Media went after the New York Times in February over a news report about hundreds of Ukrainians in the battle for Avdiivka who were captured or missing. The Ukrainian fact-check site offered little in terms of rebuttal. Detector Media only cited a spokesperson for the Ukrainian Defense Forces disputing the Times story, which it labeled disinformation. Yeah, that's their favorite. They can put out bull all the time, and that's just called news. But you put out a fact-based rebuttal, and that's disinformation. Get it? That's how Orwell explained it. Human face, meat boot. The New Voice of Ukraine quoted a Ukrainian official describing the Times story as a Russian psyop, a term for psychological warfare. Unlike similar media development programs that the International Agency for International Development, USAID, has led throughout the Middle East, Ukrainian outlets tend to produce a great deal of English content that trickles back into the domestic American audience and explicitly targets American foreign policy discourse. The New Voice of Ukraine syndicates with Yahoo News. In case you ever wonder why Yahoo News is pushing all this nonsense on you, there, now you know. Vox Ukraine is a fact-checking partner with Meta. Oh, that would be Facebook, which assists in removing content deemed Russian disinformation from Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. Detector Media has similarly led a consortium of non-profit groups pressuring social media platforms to aggressively remove content critical of Ukraine. And by Ukraine, they mean the Kiev regime. Because Ukraine is a big country, and Eastern Ukraine doesn't want to be part of a Nazi-led country. They oppose the coup. This all started in 2014, when the U.S., you know, U.S.-backed opposition groups, same as they're doing now, you really think a bunch of Ukrainian groups have power to get Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Yahoo News to do their bidding? Come on now. That's clearly American. Come on now. Who are we fooling here? Then they did the same thing then. They pretended it was Ukrainians rising up, but the Ukrainians were being paid to sit on the Maidan. And then the United States supplied the propaganda. Like, what was it? Randolph Hirsch, who sent a photographer to Cuba in 1898 to stir up war fever for the Spanish-American War. Photographer goes to Cuba, writes back and says, there's nothing going on here. And William Randolph Hirsch is said to have replied, you supply the photos, I'll supply the propaganda. And he did. And the United States got in a war. And the United States is still sitting in Cuba till this day. 1898 to 2024, the United States is still there. And Americans don't think there's anything weird about that. No. Yeah, we had a Spanish-American War in 1898, and we're still in Cuba. Yeah, yeah, that sounds legit. Sure, why wouldn't we be? Mm-hmm, see? And also in the Philippines. Also got in the Spanish-American War. It makes more sense to have it in English because one of the things that happens is that the narrative that one encounters in the mainstream media in the West is referenced as the official Ukrainian voices, said Nikolai Petro, a professor specializing in Russian and Ukrainian affairs at the University of Rhode Island. These then become the known Ukrainian voices, although they're actually only an echo of the voice that we are projecting into Ukraine, Petro added. Well, exactly. The United States spews propaganda into Ukraine, Ukrainian front groups spew it back, and then the United States tells you this is legit. These are honest Ukrainian voices talking about their lived reality. That's what this is. You should believe them because it's totally real and true. Congress is now weighing a new supplemento funding measure with approximately $60 billion earmarked for the war in Ukraine. A small portion of the emergency spending package is devoted to continued USAID programs in the country. Well, isn't that nice? This is a earmarked for Ukraine, but it's actually going to a United States propaganda mill in the Kiev regime. So, and they call that aid to Ukraine. I'm sure ordinary Ukrainians are thrilled to know this. President Zelensky, in an interview this week with Politico, argued that legislatures were skeptical of the aid package and were under the influence of Russian propaganda. They have their lobbies everywhere. In the United States, there's a commie under every bed. They have their lobbies everywhere. In the United States, in EU countries, in Britain, in Latin America, in Africa, Zelensky said of Russian influence without naming names. When we talk about the Congress, do you notice how they work with society in the United States? Yeah, sure they do. That sounds a lot like Rachel Maddow. The pro-Russian pressure groups, the Ukrainian president added, relied on a certain media group, citizens of the United States. Information control is a central dynamic playing out in the Ukraine-Russia war. U.S. media have provided wide coverage of President Vladimir Putin's efforts to clamp down on critical news outlets, enacting new criminal penalties for those publishing false information about the conflict. Many independent outlets in Russia have been forced to close, including the left-leaning radio station Echo Moskvy. The Russian government has also blocked Russian-language news sites based in the West and arrested at least 22 journalists, including the Wall Street Journal's Evan Gershkovich. Of course, that guy was spying. I don't know about the other 21, but that guy was definitely spying. Okay, and yeah. But far less attention has been paid to the Ukraine government's crackdown on independent and opposition media, a push aided by the U.S.-backed network of anti-disinformation groups. Even as Washington's effort to censor information at home is drawing greater scrutiny, its support of Ukraine's efforts reflects the increasingly global reach of the U.S. government's propaganda arms. Quote, there's an information war going on between Russia and Ukraine, and the United States is not a disinterested party, we're an active participant, unquote, said George Beebe, a director with the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. The U.S. government has been trying to shape perceptions, and it's very difficult to separate what's intended for foreign audiences from what seeps into the Anglosphere media, if you want to call it that, including here in the United States, unquote. But that's been good. That's what the, what was his name, the guy I always quote, that he coined the term, the Mighty Wolitzer back in the 60s, Frank Wisner. He said that way back then. They called it the Mockingbird media. The CIA called it the Mockingbird media, because what they did was, they would plant stories with their journalists that were on the pay, and then the journalists would print the stories, or their papers would, and then other papers would repeat the stories or print it again or refer to it as, oh, see, well, the New York Times said that, so it must be true. And that was done, we know, extensively in the lead up to the U.S. attack on Iraq, an invasion of Iraq in 2003. They would plant a story in the New York Times, and then the Washington Post would quote the New York Times and say blah, blah, blah. And then Dick Cheney would stand up there and go, well, the New York Times and the Washington Post both said this, not even saying that, yeah, but actually we planted the stories first, and then they just repeated them. And then I quote them as a respected source. That's how the scam works. American influence in Ukraine's media environment stretches back to the end of the Cold War, although it has intensified in recent years. Since the outbreak of the war, USAID support has extended to 175 national Ukrainian media entities. Over the last decade, efforts to crack down on speech have been increasingly justified as an effort to protect social media from disinformation. Again, that is information your government doesn't want you to have. And again, this is because 1% of the population controls 99% of the population. This is their way, one of their many ways, of making sure they keep their power and their wealth, and everyone else doesn't question it. The U.S. helped set up new think tanks and media watchdogs and brought over communication specialists to guide Ukraine's approach. Okay, now he's admitting it. Nino Jankovits, the polarizing official whom President Biden appointed to lead the Department of Homeland Security's Disinformation Governments Board to police social media content, previously advised the Ukrainian Foreign Ministry on its anti-disinformation work. So remember that? Remember when Biden tried to appoint her to this Department of Homeland Security, which again is only a 20-year-old institution. It needs to be disbanded. It was set up after 9/11 to protect us. And instead, what it does is repress us and lie to us. So it should be disbanded. But the only thing honest they did, and I know we said this at the time, the Disinformation Governments Board was the only U.S. institution set up that literally said what it was doing. It was governing disinformation. And they said she was an expert on it. And she was, because she'd been in Ukraine all that time putting out disinformation to them. So that was the only time they didn't lie to us. In response to questions about the U.S.-backed anti-disinformation groups in Ukraine targeting Americans, the U.S. State Department provided a statement saying it defines disinformation as, quote, false or misleading information that is deliberately created or spread with the intent to deceive or mislead. We accept there may be other interpretations or definitions and do not censor or coerce independent organizations into adopting our definition, unquote. Is that right? They only set up an entire disinformation governance board in the Department of Homeland Security, which is literally a government agency set up to suppress and repress and censor Americans. And then they're like, yeah, what we say disinformation is, we know that not everyone believes that. Yeah, because it's total bull, or that's what I call disinformation, total bull. So they say, yeah, you can have whatever different definition you want. You can identify as disinformation as being something different. You know, sure, we'll ban you and we'll censor you, but, you know, you can do that. Okay, then. Well, noting that the U.S. provides funding to credible independent media organizations to strengthen democracies in the countries we work in around the world, the statement declared, we do not control the editorial contents of these organizations. Well, not directly, you do it through the NGOs. However, disclosures indicate that the U.S. government and its contractors tasked with reforming Ukraine's institutions have directly set the agenda for Ukrainian outlets. Well, of course. When they say it's contractors, that makes it pretty easy. If you hire a contractor to do a job for you, then can you really say, well, we don't control what he does? Well, yeah, you kind of do. If he does something you don't like, you think you're going to pay him? Right. So, no, that is total bull, disinformation, to say we have we have nothing to do with what they put out. That's all on them. It's free speech, you know. Don't you know? That's Western values. Immediately after Russia invaded Ukraine 2 years ago, the USAID dispensed emergency grants to its media partners, partly through the Zinc Network, a contractor based in London that has been accused of setting up covert public relations campaigns on behalf of the British government. The grant description notes that the money went to the Zinc Network and Detector Media to assist the Ukrainian government with strategic communications and to undermine Kremlin information operations. Far from independent reporting, The grant instructions ask the recipients to provide quick, effective PR and media engagement. Well, that's when you started getting the stories about, look at that tank that hit the car. Well, that wasn't a Russian tank, that was a Ukrainian tank. But went all over the Mighty Wurlitzer and was identified as a Russian tank, and a bunch of people believed it. Or, you know, the when the right sector went in and killed the citizens of Bucha, who were suspected of collaborating with the Russians 3 days after the Russians left, then the Mighty Wurlitzer told us that Russians killed those people for months, and just no one had ever noticed their bodies. But now that the Russians were gone, oh, look, we just found a bunch of bodies just laying here on the road. Well, we know the Russians did it. And there's people that believe that to this day. It's absurd, but this is the power of propaganda. You just repeat you repeat lies over and over and over, as Goebbels said, and then people believe it, even if it's absurd on the face of it. The Russians pulled out. There were no bodies on the streets. The mayor of Bucha stood up and said, yes, we're liberated. Isn't it wonderful? We're so glad to drive up and down the streets and see no Russians. He didn't notice any dead bodies in the streets when he was driving up and down the street. Mm-hmm, sure. And then 2-3 days later, all of a sudden, oh, look what we found, a bunch of dead bodies. Sure. In addition to countering Russian disinformation, the money was intended to maintain public morale and bolster international support for solidarity with Ukraine. Again, that's part of the disinformation. They talk like the Kiev regime is Ukraine, even though most of Ukraine doesn't go along with this, and especially Eastern Ukraine, who that's why they succeeded from Ukraine, because they didn't want to be part. They didn't want to be ruled by Americans and Nazis. Last September, journalist Jack Paulson reported on a leaked report from the Zinc Network's Open Information Partnership, which helps coordinate the activities of several anti-Russian disinformation nonprofits around Europe backed by NATO members, including Detector Media. The lengthy report defines disinformation as not only false or misleading content, but also, quote, verifiable information which is unbalanced or skewed, amplifies or exaggerates certain elements for effect, or uses emotive or inflammatory language to achieve effects which fit within existing Kremlin narratives, aims, or activities, unquote. So, yeah, that's what they call malinformation. Yeah, it's true, but we don't like it. So we're going to censor it because Americans cannot hear the truth. They can't handle the truth because maybe they'll change their minds and maybe they won't believe the bull we're spewing to them if they have access to actual truth that goes against the lies we're telling them. So we have to censor that too. In other words, factual information with emotional language that simply overlaps with anything remotely connected to Russian viewpoints is considered disinformation. According to this U.S.-backed consulting firm helping to guide the efforts of Ukrainian think tanks and media. Many of the broad narratives the report identified as Russian disinformation follow this vague rubric. These include allegations that NATO is using Ukraine as a pawn in a proxy war against Russia and concern that Ukrainian politicians are corrupt, which is hilarious because NATO says they're using Ukraine as a pawn. They say this is the best investment we've ever made. They say we're going to fight to the last Ukraine. They say that they're dying and we're not, so that's great. They're killing Russians and the only ones dying are Ukrainians. That's wonderful. But they're not proxies? Isn't that saying they're proxies? I mean, anyone with a brain can see it by themselves. They don't actually have to have it pointed out to them by anyone else. But when people point that out, then these people call it disinformation. And Ukrainians' politicians are corrupt? Yeah, that's why they have 13 mansions in Paris, England, London, Miami. But they're not corrupt. They got that by honest labor. Really? I don't think so. Well, anyhow, that's all the time I have. There is more to this, and it's very interesting. But just know that your tax dollars are not going to help the homeless or clean up the water supplies or build infrastructure. No, 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 no. Your tax dollars are going to push Ukrainians to their deaths, and then they're also going to propaganda campaigns that tell you that's a good thing. Yeah, freedom, democracy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the end of Occupy the Airwaves. See you next week.